0330, Boston Manor, a knock on the door. I stand up and look at the camera. A large man, a boy. A boy with glasses and brown hair in his eyes and a brown uniform. A bear. A bear walks in off the Boston Manor Road and up to the door. I let him in. His glasses are steamed up and he has rings under his eyes. I notice he keeps bumping into the lockers and footstools and swivel chairs. I start to imagine his legs as a rash of bruises, purple and red marks and braces, and then returning to his work, entering into the mess room, propping up his leg on the water cooler, his hand on the vending machine, pulling up his brown uniform leg, brushing hair back out of his eyes, taking off his steamed up glasses and placing his glasses on the tabletop surface, not remembering where he put them, looking at his bruises. Look, look everyone, look what just happened to me, look. I swing round on my swivel chair to ask if he needs keys, to sign in. What is it that you want? But he's no longer standing up, but is now down on his hands and knees, opening drawers, bumping into me, sniffing under my legs. I notice he has a brown bushy tail spilling out the back of his uniform jacket. What is it you're here for? I ask once again, and as I do, I instinctively reach below to stroke his tail. It sounds like he's purring, and so I go to pat his head and say, there's a good boy, here, have a biscuit, there's a good boy, and put out my hand and open it, cupped, as if providing a small mirage of milk. Thirsty work, eh, boy? He sticks out his tongue, and I quickly snatch my hand back and give him an extra kick. Whack, hard, under the desk for good measure.
Dear Otter, you have our attention now. A power cut last night, right here at Osterley. All lights and equipment turned off. Of course, immediately I sprang into action and got straight on the phone to Lotts Road. Enraged, engaged. I try again, sir, I state, sir, I am the Osterley station supervisor and I demand my lecky is turned back to on. Well, the very next day I went straight down to Lotts Road at Chelsea Creek to make a formal complaint, banged on their door, rang a few buzzers. Hello there, can you hear me? Anyone? Listen, I want my station's electricity back on. No answer. I look up towards the steam turbines and what used to be the splendid rough shapes of Lotts Road operating at 33 cycles per second and a record-breaking transmission of 5,500 kW, the nerve centre of London's underground, depicted in the iconic Edward McKnight Kiefer poster of 1931, the dedicated powerhouse of the entire underground combine, and the scene of the final showdown between the underground official, the young, blue-eyed hero, and the employee of Lotts Road Power Station, the brown-haired villain, in Asquith's 1928 classic, but is now just an everyday, brand-new, multi-billion development of utterly bland, totally unaffordable luxury flats. National Grid, Greenwich, I should cocker. I wish Lotts Road was still here today. I'm bored of these developments. Where's J.G. Ballard when you need him? I march up to the first front door of the complex. Hello, hello. Does anyone live here? A shout out, JG, is that you? Are you here? Let me in, JG, I shout. Let me in. And yet from the corner of my eye, I can see two security guards, men in black suits and white shirts, walking towards me, conversing into their radios. Lima 1 to base, Lima 1 to base, there is disturbance at Unit 26. Let me in, I shout, and now I can see a man in a white dressing gown on his balcony. He has silver hair, and looks like a fox, and has a hairy chest, and he shouts, "Back off, you twat." And as I look up, I notice he is holding his John Lewis barbecue set above his head, it's in his arms, and he's propelling it into the air, and now it's falling through the air, as I watch it twist and turn in the dull Chelsea sky, and now, ouch, it's landing on my head. Hours South Ealing Station. The old man calls and states, "Son, there is a swan down below. Be a sport and investigate. Any phobias?" "What, with swans?" I reply. "Governor, not that I'm aware of." Now, every time the old man phones, and increasingly he's phoning up more and more, and each request more urgent and fantastical, I undo the top button of my shirt and hold my hand across my neck and tap my tonsils with my fingers as it helps steadies one's breathing and simply does wonders for my rising levels of fear. This man's voice lives like an army of mice in the pit of my stomach. I first met Mr. Mole when his trousers fell down in South Ealing Ticket Hall. He was wearing another pair of trousers underneath, which was weird in itself, and as he stood there with one pair of trousers on and one pair of trousers down at his ankles, I debated within myself whether I should cross over and tell him or just to let him be, as he might be fully aware that his outer trousers were no longer attached. However, as I was debating this within myself, Mr. Mole stepped forward and fell over. I immediately rushed to him, caught him just in time, and from that day onwards he's always stopped to have a quick chat. And although his trousers have never fallen down again, I'm never entirely sure if he's wearing one or two pairs of trousers. But I don't suppose any of this really matters. Unless I walk away, Mr. Mole will just keep talking. I look up from the flower bed and see a red-haired fox with a horse attached between its legs. It sways like a tree. "Now, that horse, mister, I've seen you before." I call out, "Ballycastle, is that you? That knight in Kempton? And now what's happening? She's standing up, and he's standing behind. His top hooves are inside her shirt. Why? He's taking off his trousers. "Put them back on," I say, "at 3 a.m. This horse looks Spanish. "And now what?" "Yes, I do believe they're fucking. Fucking up, right here against the poster frame. Goodness, what a scene. I'd only just put that poster up too. Why, he's not even taking his backpack off." I simply don't know where to look, or when to ever again look away. Round and round the flower bed they go. We've been growing potatoes for the community, successfully, highly, trying to avoid the headlight of the passing trains. God, he's taking ages. Legs like jelly, hurry up man, it's raining. And they try once again and again and again to finish it off in a puddle, hurrah. Thank you. man with a red face walks up to me. He's wearing a dark railway uniform and looks just like the member of staff from my photograph of Acton Town in the early 1900s. Just a bit older. As he approaches, I notice the top two buttons on his white shirt are undone, revealing a red chest with grey hair spurting out. His face looks burnt, or maybe he's just embarrassed. White flakes of skin must have peeled off his face, as there are white flakes of skin on his shirt, or it could be dried custard. He stands where he is, his face is very red, and he asks me what I'm doing, and I answer, "I've finished work and now I'm heading home," whilst continuing my ongoing quest for the Acton Town Otter. But the man with the red face pulls his fingers to his lips like a be quiet gesture, as if he's telling me to be quiet. Actually, he is telling me to be quiet. Fine. It's very noisy along here anyway, and incredibly hot, and I'm simply heading home and tired from working all night, and now tired and explaining that I'm heading home, but everyone makes everything so complicated all of the time. The man with the red face takes off his shirt. I know, I wasn't expecting that either. But I suppose it's very hot and I think about doing the same and then think better of it. He has a silver medallion hanging around his neck and it has a small emblem of a black crow. For all I know, he may be a fascist. He says, "It's very hot," and I reply, "Yes, it's always very hot here in the Golden Mile." And I smile and I keep looking at his red cheeks, which look are even starting to feel like they're getting redder. He says again, "What are you doing here?" His voice is rough, aggressive, like coarse sandpaper over my ears. Anyway, it feels like he's shouting at me and I'm thinking, why do I have to deal with this? Why can't I just continue on? What has any of this got to do with this red-faced scary fucker? Like I say, it feels like he's shouting at me. Actually, he is shouting at me. "What are you doing here?" And as he shouts, I notice his fat little fingers are twiddling with the silver crow on the medallion hanging across his neck. He continues to stare at me, staring for what I would claim a considerable amount of time. And as he stares, I suddenly notice, I realise, his fat red cheeks are getting bigger, his double chin is getting bigger, his eyes are disappearing, he's like a pig. His whole face is being swallowed up by the growing emerging fatness of his double cheeks and chinless chin. He's standing so close to me, I can lick the sweat off his chest. And at that moment, that very moment, not only does an otter run across the motorway, but the silver crow on the red-faced man's medallion flaps its wings and flies into my mouth. Wow!